Hey, it's Josh Simpson.
And Jake Jabbour.
From The Meat Improv. The Meat Improv is a comedy podcast where we bring on the best comedians in the world to tell meaty stories from their lives, and then they do improv comedy with us. You don't think we're good at improv? Check out this little snippet from Jake Jabbour's real life.
Hey, where's all my cats?
He never knows. The Meat Improv. You can listen to it on iTunes or your favorite podcasting app. That's The Meat Improv.
Hey, listeners. Welcome to... I'm going to take out my gum. Welcome to the Improv Obsession podcast. I'm your host, Stephen Perlstein. Today's guest, Nick Mandernack. He's a funny guy. He's a nice guy. He's an intelligent guy. You're going to hear all of that in the following episode, so don't worry. You'll agree with me. But also, I wanted to real quickly thank you who left iTunes feedback. Albert, I'm glad you're thinking about taking classes after listening to the podcast. Improv is a lot of fun, and it changed my life for the better. Maybe it could do the same for you. Who knows? So leave iTunes feedback if you can. I'd appreciate it. Also, last week, I added a new feature to the show that you can call in, leave questions for guests, feedback, whatever. You can call 225-OBSESS-9 or 225-627-3779. You can leave a voicemail, and if I like it, I'll put it on the show, like this one.
What?
Okay, so that one was a bit weird, but still, thanks for listening and calling. Feel free to do that at any time. Seriously, it'd be fun. If you guys hate it, maybe I'll scrap it. Oh, if you hate it, call and tell me that you hate it, and I won't put it on the show. You're mean. Also, don't forget to follow the blog at improvobsession.com. Check out the Facebook at facebook.com/improvobsession, and you can follow me on Twitter at Perlstein. All right, that's it. Here we go. On with the show!
It's the Improv Obsession.
And feel free to, you know, make it your own. Jump in. Do whatever you want.
I'll do it, man. Just riff.
Just let it fucking flow out of you. Awesome. All right. Let's start this thing up. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Improv Obsession podcast. Damn it. No, I'm starting over. I'm stopping right now. No, and I'll tell. Wait, it's not even like my own shitty intro. I don't even care about that. It's that I was gonna ask how to say your last name correctly because I have a guess, but I don't think it's right. So
no, keep.
No, all right, fuck.
This is just I relate so much to you right now. This is just me all the time. Just like, God, I wish I just had.
I was going to leave myself a sticky note to remember to get the pronunciation of your last name. Didn't do it, so fuck it.
Okay.
Here we go. Improv Obsession Podcast. I'm your host, Stephen Perlstein. Today we have a very special guest, Nick Mandernach?
Mandernach.
Mandernach.
But here's
Mandernach.
The thing.
Okay.
First of all, this actually varies even within my family. Even my family has several ways of saying it. One of my uncles says Mandernach.
Mandernach. Is he from Wisconsin?
Was from Iowa.
Okay.
Yeah, my dad's family is in Iowa. My dad says Mandernach, but there's several pronunciations.
Yeah.
Several pronunciations.
Okay, so I was wrong, but somebody I was sort of right.
I had a teacher in middle school who, for the entire year, called me Nick Mandernach. Like someone would name their kid like a portion of their last name.
Yeah.
So, no,
that's
you're not.
That's weird.
You're not
wrong. I had in junior high school, I don't remember why, but I was like meeting with a counselor and he asked me if I knew like the origins of my last name, Perlstein. And I go, yeah, it's like a Jewish Polish last name.
Yeah.
And he goes, no, it's German. And I was like, I think I know better than you.
You're wrong.
Probably just wanted to correct me and everything I've ever.
I heard the origin of my last name, and like I should know definitively, but I've heard two things, which is one of them is like muddy swamp. Like that was like that somehow may have related to a job that my ancestors had.
Oh my god, were your ancestors swamp loggers?
So
they were there. They're the first History Channel show.
And then I think another one was like something of kings, which it's funny that it's one of
those. Wow, yeah,
two.
Those are very
Let's just go with the King's one. That's much better. All right, so... so talking comedy stuff, usually kind of just start, like, do you have, you know what, fuck that, I want to start something completely different. You went to Cal State Northridge, I saw that, yes.
That's right.
What? Okay, because I went to Cal State Northridge, and I'm just curious, this is going to be interesting to anybody, how did you feel about your time at Cal State Northridge?
I loved it.
Fuck.
I really liked it because, I mean, it was just close to home, so, like, I could take classes at UCB, and, you know, I didn't have to commute too far. I grew up in the Valley, so I was kind of right between the two of them.
Where in the Valley?
Like Sherman Oaks, kind of like Sherman Oaks.
Okay, yeah. Cool.
So I was, like, right between those two, and it was easy for me to get from one to the other. But it was a commuter school. One fact is that I did not make one friend in 4 years, like, despite all my best efforts, because everyone would just commute, and then they were just gone.
Yeah, so. I had similar experience. I didn't make. I think I have, like, one friend from the, and I lived in the dorms. Like, I was there constantly.
Oh, really?
I was there constantly. I didn't meet a lot of people, but. I remember, like, my senior year, they had the hot dog on a stick truck come. I don't know if that ever happened, but it came, and so, like, me and a few friends from, like, film class, and, like, friends is very loose in this one, like, went and got some the hot dogs on a stick, and then we're kind of, like, looking around, all the benches were seated, and so we went and sat on the grass, and we're like, oh, this is what college is supposed to be like, sitting on the grass, eating lunch with your friends. Yeah. Never saw them again.
Oh, yeah. CSUN was funny, too, because, you know, they had this huge, like, student entertainment budget, but they were just the absolute worst performers.
Least interesting. You were there, you graduate 06, 07?
Oh, God. Like 06, 07, okay. Right there. Yeah, right there. God, it's terrible that I don't know. But I think, like, the year I graduated, like, they had, like, Margaret Cho, and they had, like, paid her, like, several thousand dollars to come in.
That's not fun. That's not fun for anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, they try so hard to do, like, social events on campus, and they fail. They failed. Totally. So, because it's a commuter school, nobody wants to be there.
Yeah. It's interesting, like, you know, to kind of relate that to comedy, like, how different that my college experience was from improv experience, where some of my, like, so many of my closest friends, and I've, like, met so many great people from UCB, but when I actually went to college and, you know, was there, you know, full time, like, I had such a tough time socially. So
I get that. I feel very much the same way. I was having a thought the other day when I was driving, and it was something to, like, I don't know how to, you know how your brain works, and it's just crazy, but I just remember thinking something like, what did I do for years? Like, I don't even remember my life. I'm like, oh yeah, I was at Cal State Northridge. Like, it just didn't matter. Like, yeah, I didn't make a lot of friends, and it wasn't like an important part of my life. But yeah, I feel the same way about, you know, improv and getting into comedy and stuff.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
Oh, this is great. Like, right. this is where I wanted. I almost wish I had been spending my time instead of college. And I didn't even know about UCB until I graduated in like 2009. So I didn't even know this existed.
Do you think maybe it's just like an age thing of just like. Like I was the same way in that I didn't really appreciate going to class that much. Do you think it's just like as you get older, you're more sort of involved and invested in what you're learning about, or?
No, but see that, no, I don't think so. Cause honestly, I was pretty interested. I was in film and I was very interested in it. And I kind of wanted it to be a social thing, but it wasn't, right. You know, people. And that, you know, maybe it's also part of the major too. Like, a lot of people are very much like, somebody said to me at one point for film, like, if I don't get picked to do a senior thesis film, I'm just going to drop out and my dad's going to let me make a feature film with some money. And I was just like, what? Like, you know, so everybody's kind of in it for themselves, and that's I think that's film, but it's not. And that's the great thing about improv is it's not that an improv.
It's an ensemble. It's all ensemble work. Great. Like, if you're like, oh, I'm going to get on a Herald team, or I'm dropping out my desk to give me a theater, it's not going to work. It's like, you have to be involved with other people. Like, you have to be social. There's just no way around that. So that's a good point.
Yeah, it's great. I fucking love improv. When did you start with UCB, and when did you, like, find out about it? Was this while you were in school?
While I was in college, a friend of mine was taking classes, and I went to his 101 show, and it was just like, we had done, like, comedy together and stuff like that. I was instantly jealous.
Yeah.
I was instantly envious. I was like, oh man, it's like, it's so interesting to sort of have a formal comedic training where so much of what we had been doing was just, you know, like, oh, I think this is silly. And then, you know, kind of like we would, like, for instance, we would argue about a video, but we had no foundation. We had no, like, theory or foundation for on which to base any arguments.
Yeah.
So I was just like, oh, man, like, I love that idea.
Yeah.
So from there, I enrolled in the classes.
When-ish was that? I'm just curious.
Let's see. So that must have been, God, I think I was 22... 23, I think like 07, maybe 07.
Okay.
Maybe 07, that's my best guess. I'd have to check on that.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Were you doing like comedy things beforehand?
Sort of. I did some comedy with friends. Like that was just something that I always did for fun. I've always loved doing just, you know, silly videos and, you know, we would do like some open mics and things like that. But actually my main drive, oddly enough, at that time was writing experimental short fiction. That was another one of the reasons that I went into improv too, like at least that I had told myself, was to sort of like I was having like intense writer's block and I was like, oh, I just, when seeing those people so freely create just on stage, that was something I was like, oh, maybe that's something that I could take into,
sure.
You know, that serious fiction writing. Fiction.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I used to like doing like short comedy videos and before, like in high school and stuff, mm-hmm. like pretty much every time you had an opportunity to do whatever you want with a project in school, yeah. it was like a silly video.
Right.
And I remember I got in trouble in middle school because I did a video where one of my friends pretended that he was pooping into a fish tank. So that was classic. And I'm pretty sure that's why I ended up going to film school, because I'm like, oh, maybe I'll just go make silly videos
right.
longer.
Right.
But... there's one other thing you said, and I totally forgot what I was going to say. Fuck it. Whatever. So then you get into UCB, mm-hmm. and you start taking classes. I don't know, early comedy learning experience. What were you doing? Who were your teachers? What kind of stuff was happening?
My early teacher, Will McLaughlin, yeah. Brett Christensen, Chad Carter classes, John Bowie, who was like, I loved his class, and I think... what I took from him is I think early on, like I really believed that like the meaner you were in a scene, the better the scene would be. You know, like it was like for some reason I just thought like that was the comedy formula. And he just said, something he said to me was just like, it's so much more interesting when people are nice. Like you get so much further in a scene when people are like care about each other. And that was like definitely a big turning moment for me.
Yeah. I feel like that's sort of, yeah, you still see that like in improv, early improv and even sketch writing sometimes, mm-hmm. it's just like, how fucking terrible can these people be to each other?
Right.
And like, and what kind of mean combination of words can you string together in an interesting way? Yeah. That's a common thing. I feel like,
I think it's part of it is just like, it's an immediate unusual thing button.
Yeah.
Like being mean to anyone in any scene is immediately going to give you an unusual thing that's very uninteresting.
Yeah.
I think that's maybe the reason behind it.
Yeah. I don't know anything about the origins of Room 101.
Oh, okay.
So like room for, I guess for everybody. Well, yeah, you can explain what's Room 101 and then where did it come from?
Great. Room 101 is, one of the indie nights. It's, just about 3 years old. And, the origins of it, Shakedown, I had started Shakedown. It was the first group that I put together. It was like, I had kind of been in several groups that I was invited to join that were fun, but it was just like, they were just kind of random assortments of people from classes. And so Shakedown was the first one where I had been going to like TNT and Crash Bar. And like, I was like, I'd taken classes with some of these people and I was like, oh man, I love this little cluster. I love this little cluster. I'm going to bring them together and ask them to join a group. Our coach that time is Joel Church Cooper, and he was doing a workshop. And so what he basically did was he gave us his workshop space after the workshop was finished on Wednesday nights.
Yeah.
So he gave us that and we would put up, it started out, there were four groups, two and two. And then we did that for months. And then we gradually accrued enough money from donations from that, so that we had enough money to start renting the space out ourselves when he stopped doing the workshops to pursue writing.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. And then, so you said that's been running for about 3 years, and do you guys perform every night?
Every week. Yeah. Shakedown performs every week. We do a slot, which has been, that's so fun. I feel like those are some of the most fun shows I do. And I wonder, that weekly performing for me, I think it takes so much of the edge off. I remember when I started doing TNT, it's I will do one show in three. This will be the last show I do for 5 months.
Yeah.
And I think that anxiety for was tough for me. And so when I'm just look, we're going to be focused because, we're a group that takes this seriously and, we practice every weekend. This is a goal for us. But at the same time, it's if we lose this, we don't need to slit our wrists or anything like that. We can come back next week and do that. So I definitely learned a lot from having that kind of relaxed, low stakes attitude towards the show.
Yeah. I remember being, and again, just starting to get over this, but, very hungry for shows. Mm-hmm. In the beginning, you're just and I remember not liking people, for people getting to do shows way more than me, Johnny Schwartzbein. I remember there's nothing about him that about his improv or him as a person that I didn't like. Mm-hmm. And Mono was one I saw all the time, and I'm just fuck these guys. I want to do a show too. And I even think I felt that way a little bit about you.
Oh, sure.
And because I don't even think you were doing as many shows as maybe some of the other guys, but I just remember seeing you around so much. I'm just fuck this guy too. I want to do this.
Right.
Let me on stage.
Well, I think that's such a good point too, because something that I think about and that a lot of the indie nights talk about is this is a resource. And I think the big question, and I think a question that kind of defines a lot of the shows is how do you divide that resource among people? Stage time is a resource. So I think it makes total sense, to have those feelings. So it's just what do you do with that? How do you distribute that is kind of a question that defines a lot of the nights.
Yeah. It's hard. And things, especially ones like the 11th hour, they put up three teams one team is going to be the last, for them, the last team of the night is going to be an insanely great team. You're not going to be on that team. It's safe to say that. So you're I got one or two slots maybe. Mm-hmm, and it's just, mm-hmm. Yeah. So it is heartbreaking and, in a way. And then, you guys, even if you're pretty good at keeping in and submitting, for TNT, you're going to pop up once every 6 months. I think it's the same thing for Crash Bar and Room 101 and all of them. Yeah. So it's you gotta,
that's
true. You gotta do a lot. And I feel I don't know. So maybe you can answer this a little bit. Do you guys, give maybe preferential treatment to people who, I don't know, have good shows or bring people or friends or or is there,
Well, I think one of the biggest, factor in a group being put on the wait list early or getting is more etiquette, I think, than necessarily performance. So so the teams that are coming and they're staying and they're promoting, that's the team that's going to get preference over. If there's a team of eight people and then two of them show up and then ditch after the show, that team just isn't going to get And for me, I think that, and one thing we talk about a lot is we look for who's coming to the indie nights, who's supporting. That's going to be a factor in it. And then for performance, a lot of times in the later half of our show, we have two halves, four teams each. In the later half, that's generally going to be teams that that are going to be more consistent, more veteran teams like that. So there's a few factors. It's a little bit complicated, but
right. Mm-hmm. Fair enough. I was talking to Hector about this last week, but I was saying, and I feel you guys have, and correct me if I'm wrong or what you think about this, but I feel the first half at your guys' show is a tough half. You sort of need to kick ass there. Something about Room 101, I always feel it's a tough audience, and they're not gonna give you.
Really? I think, to me, I'm surprised by how much that varies night by night. I actually feel depending on the night, sometimes the first half I'll be oh man, that first half killed and had just a packed crowd, and the second half might dwindle.
Yeah.
Or it might be the other way around. But I feel overall, it's like people want you to have a good show and they yeah. want you to succeed. But no, I think like for me, like, I mean, just last week we had like a, like our first half fucking killed. Yeah. So I think it depends. I mean, it's going to be night by night.
Yeah.
But
that's fair enough. Mm-hmm. That's fair enough. Yeah. Maybe that's just my personal anxiety because mm-hmm. I've only done that show maybe three times mm-hmm. Room 101 in the first half. And it's always been the first time I remember it was really rough and there wasn't a ton of people, but I just yeah. remember going like, oh, this is rough. And then the second time I was like, all right, we got to come out like swinging hard. And I tried and I'm trying a lot. And it was just like, it was still, we got, you know, it wasn't a bad show, but I just mm-hmm. remember going like, these guys will not, they're not giving us like any sympathy laughs. They're not giving, you know,
really interesting.
And I was, and then, yeah, then the third time I think we bombed and I was like, the third time it was there, we bombed and I was just like, fuck man, what is it with this? I need to do something better.
Wow.
So maybe I'm just a terrible improviser.
No,
Nick.
I don't think so. I don't think so at all. That's interesting. Like, I think like, do you think maybe it's because like more or less like a lot of the indie night shows have like just improviser audience members? Is that kind of one of the things that you're thinking?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a part of it. Like mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, I was gonna talk to you about this later actually, but like one of those things that happens I think in improv is you get laughs over just doing improv, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you just go like, you're wearing a hat, people will laugh at that. And it's, there's nothing funny about it, uh-huh. but it's just like, you're doing improv and you're labeling stuff. Or if right. somebody's doing an action and you label it for them or whatever, you'll get like a little laugh, and it's not a huge one,
yeah.
but it is one of those ones that you get just out of nowhere. And there's nothing funny about it.
Oh yeah, totally. Like the environment working and like yeah. those simple things. Sure.
Yeah. Little very simple stuff. And just, yeah, like even like just labeling, like just basic, like really not funny stuff people mm-hmm. will laugh at. And it's, there's nothing wrong with that, but it's just like people are recognizing like, oh, you're doing something that's not quite, you know, whatever.
Right.
I don't know where that comes from, but yeah, like I feel like that's some, like specifically I was thinking in Crash Bar, like you can just do little things like that and they're not going to give you that. Like you need to be funny. I feel like it's something that really comes off, and I don't know, again, mm-hmm. that may be just me, and that's not a bad thing either. Like yeah. I want a good audience that,
right. You have to earn it through the,
yeah. Cause mm-hmm. you know, you get there and just start laughing at freaking anything, but yeah. it's sort of like, it's almost cheapened. Like I did a show a long, long time ago at IO West where we had a good show. And then another team came on and they had a good show too, but I was watching it and like the shit that they were doing, and that's, you know, who cares? But like, mm-hmm. I was just like, this isn't funny. This isn't good improv. This is just goofy people making goofy voices and like
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
And I just remember feeling like a little bit less proud of a good show after that. But you know,
I think it depends. That's a good point. Like going to a lot of indie shows, like I think we were sort of talking about how a lot of the crowd is improvisers. And I think
yeah.
one thing, like, you know, when we talk about like game or comedy, it's like, it's the contrast between your expectation and what's presented.
Right.
And I think for an improviser, if you've like gone through classes, you expect solid improv choices. And so if someone comes in and just acts like a goofy nut,
yeah.
you know, you might laugh at them, but it's only because it's like, oh, I expected you to do a good job.
Right.
And you are just like almost intentionally blowing it.
Goofy.
And so I think those are definitely some laughs that you can get, but they will destroy you. Like,
yeah.
As a performer, they will destroy you.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Yeah. If you're chasing after that for long, it's brutal. I feel like I've gone through a phase with that. And maybe, I wonder if you ever have too. Have you ever gone through a phase of like doing some similar goofy or bad choices like over and over?
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, totally. I think, to me, and something that, like, I mean, look for it. I wonder if I have a different like perspective of how much I've changed, but was just like, I would just go straight to yelling. Like that was my, was just like, and maybe it was just that anxiety of like, you know, being on stage, but
yeah.
like, it would just go like 0 to 120 for no reason.
Just flip on a dime. Yeah.
And I think it's also just like, you know, we're sort of talking about like, it's like, what do you want? Do you just want laughs?
Yeah.
Or do you want to progress as a performer? And I think it's a really kind of a tough move sometimes to be like, look, I want to get used to trusting the technique and developing myself in, you know, finding games, playing in a grounded human way.
Yeah.
And when you do that, and when you sort of like turn into that path, it's like, it's not an easy one. I think like at first you're probably going to lose a lot of the laughs that you got off of just
yeah.
being, you know, being bad or being goofy. But the long-term benefits I think are just like make that an inevitable choice.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. It's, I've done shows that are hard to say that they're good because of how poorly audiences respond. Like I have very vividly a show in my mind fairly recently that like we're doing good improv. And mm-hmm. I remember thinking that I'm like, I'm doing this all right. Mm-hmm. But that nobody's laughing. And I remember it was just like, I'm going to keep doing this. And like, I do it. And I just like, I guess I'm just going to go all the way in to keep on doing my good improv and hope that they come around, which they did not. I did a 26 minute set, Nick, fucking no laughs. And it was painful. And it was, and I remember just thinking like all of it, I'm like, this is good improv. I'm not going to go the other way and like that's just start great. Making dick jokes or whatever they want. I don't know what they want, but I'm doing the good improv.
I think that's like the way it has to be. Another thing to consider is, you know, you're also, holistically, you have to look at the entire show. So, for instance, if the first two groups have done just nuts, off-the-wall, goofy improv, and they're going for those laughs, that might affect how the audience, like, perceives your show. They might be, you know, again, this is based on, this is sort of speculative, but...
Sure.
So I think, like, that's, inevitably, that's the improv that will pay off.
Yeah.
You know, because the goofy improv, it's like... You could literally just pull someone off the crowd and they can show you how to be uncommitted and make sort of like dumb voices.
Comment
on these like meta choices and sell each other out. Like anyone can do that. But I don't think anyone can really support and humanize choices and things like that. So I think, you know, really like pushing yourself towards that is awesome.
Yeah. Let's see. Well, all right. So... people submit questions to me.
Great.
I post on Tumblr when I have a guest come out. Right. People submit questions. And this one was a really insightful one.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like this is a good time for it. Ryan Hitchcock says, Nick, how are you so fly? How does that flyness manifest itself in your improv? How are you so fly?
Wow, that's hitting me hard. You're hitting me with the tough questions.
I do, yeah.
I
don't pull punches.
I'm trying to think of how to respond to that. Well, thank you for that.
Good job, Ryan.
Steven, you want to help me interpret this question? Like, how are we going to define fly? How do you define fly?
Well, for me, I think of fly, for some reason, as anybody with an afro. How are you so having an afro?
Okay.
And how does
so
that...
So it's like, what do you call it? Maybe like swagger? Like what
sure.
You call it? Okay, great.
There we go. Let's do
that. I don't think I'm a swaggerful person, but definitely I think about when I get on stage is just trying. I think the first sort of hurdle you have with an audience is they feel scared for you. Like you're doing something that is a nightmare for most people. Like, you know,
sure.
Literally you're doing a sketch show based on one single word. You're not only speaking in public, you're making your script up in public on the moment. So I think to me, like the more confidently you come out, and I don't think that's necessarily like having swagger, but when you can come out and you can convince an audience that you're going to be okay, that you're enjoying what you're doing, I think that puts them at ease. And that's kind of like, for them, it's like, oh, okay, now I can enjoy myself.
Yeah. People, number one fear, for people is public speaking.
That's right, yeah.
And then, going on top of that, I'm sure if you could extrapolate that question a little bit further, is it more scary to have speak publicly with a script or without one? Without one's probably scarier.
Right.
You're coming out, giving a lot of confidence is something that's important.
Like one thing I noticed like on Harold Night that I try to do, and this is
control.
Something that I learned from Flat Jackson, was like, I noticed like when they would come out and get their suggestion, they would come out almost to the front of the stage. Like they would play so far up stage.
Yeah.
It was just immediately like, it was like, okay, they have presence and they're going to enjoy what they're doing. As opposed to like, you know, I see teams where like, they come out and they literally like go to the back wall. They go straight to the back. And I think that sends a message of like, I can send a message of, you know, God, like, get us out of here. So
yeah,
that's something that, you know, Flap Jackson had such great swagger. And that's something that, like, when I come out, I usually, like, try to come up as far front and just be like, okay, look, I'm...
Yeah.
We're, like, I feel okay.
Yeah, I think that people don't... The people in improv, it's just not part of the training, but people are not aware of stage presence and stage picture and stuff like that. And that's something that, like... with my team I've done and I've seen people and like sort of like I've been on stage like doing the intro before and I step really close and then people are kind of far back from me. I'm like, no guys, get up here, like we need to
it just shows the audience, it's like, look, we're here to have fun and we're okay,
we're not worried about it. And that's one of those things, like being in control. I think if you lose that control, that's when audiences will start to wane and just or even just worry for you. Like I saw there's a Bangarang show This is a while back, and Stanger, Ryan Stanger, dude, I don't know if you heard about this. He hit his head on the stage.
Yeah.
You were
there. I saw that, yeah.
I saw that one. I saw that show. And I remember going, oh man, you just lost a good portion of the audience. And it's not his fault. And I'm whatever.
Right.
He was just, he was so committed to doing what his little thing that he hit his head on the stage and started bleeding. And that's one of those things. It's like, they lost a little bit of control, and like, they were still being funny. They worked through it. And I think they actually ended up getting him back, cause he came back out and he tied. I was just impressed that he managed to tie up that whole Harold still after going off stage for like 3 minutes and then coming back. But yeah, like that's one of those instances where people go, oh fuck, this is just happening. This is just chaos. And it was, yeah. And for you know, a minute or two, it's just like, is he okay? What's happening?
So that's kind of an extrapolation off that one principle, just like audiences.
Yeah. I think they're scared, and I don't think they want, you know, they're scared for you, and they don't want you to be scared. If you put fear into it, you know, then where's the fun?
Just like you're saying, like, people are naturally empathetic, and I think they're kind of like, we constantly are putting ourselves into other people's positions. Yeah. So if you can make it seem like, oh, I'd love to be where this dude is, you know, I'd love to be where this team is right now, as opposed to like, oh my God, run, you guys run, which I've done those shows. Like, that's just off of experience of, like, I've done shows where we come out and we're just like, oh, like our presence is, we want to run.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And that's, and it's hard. It's hard to watch. I watched a show. I talked to a few friends about this not too long ago at Crash Bar, and it was one of the worst improv shows I've ever seen. And it's, you know, whatever, you had a bad night. Steam had a bad night. I don't even know who they were. Mm-hmm. But I just remember going like, oh guys, save yourselves. Like, you need to do something here. Like, you know, keep on repeating these like non-choices of like, I don't know what we're doing. I don't know why we're here. Right. And you're just like, and people keep repeating this for minutes and minutes and minutes. And then next thing you know, like, you're like, you guys don't have anything. You have you literally have nothing to work with. Like, for the love of God. And it's hard. Yeah. To watch that as an audience member. Cause you're like, you guys are lost and I don't want you to be, I want you to do a good show.
Follow me.
Like, I'm gonna tag in. I got this. But yeah, I think you're absolutely right. The fear in the audience is something that you're kind of trying to conquer.
I put out the word swagger, but I think confidence isn't something that's necessarily like, I don't mean that to be confused with like arrogance. I think also if you come out arrogantly, it can be off-putting. But yeah. I think like Eugene Cordero is a great example of like, he'll come out and he has such a soft-spoken energy, but it's still confident.
Yeah.
And it's still sort of like swagger in his, you know, like in his way, that's how he does it. And it puts you at ease and, you know, gets you engaged.
Yeah. Every time, you know, if Eugene's not stepping out being a little bit silly, which he is very often, and it's funny, but if Eugene's not stepping out silly, he's stepping out as if nobody's around, as if he's really just interacting with these people. Right. And it's like, and there's nothing to indicate, you know, other than maybe a slightly louder voice that he's on stage or that he's even like worried or aware of the audience. Mm-hmm. He's just like, hey man, like, you gonna, what are you doing today? You got some pies?
You're like, what? Yeah. That's great. I think that's awesome. Like, it's that fun thing of like, of the audience feels like you're entered into a private world. Like we've taken a wall down on an apartment and we're seeing something really happen in front of us. And that's always going to get you engaged.
That's a great angle for it. I love it. Let's see. So I guess, I'm trying to figure out what to talk about next. Okay, so let's go to another submitted question before we go into other stuff. Megan Baker, what's the craziest thing you've ever done on stage?
Oh my God. Craziest thing you've ever done on stage
submitted by Megan Baker, aka the comedy hipster, wonderful photographer. Check out her Tumblr.
I guess like the first thing I thought of was maybe a month and a half, maybe like a couple months ago, Shakedown did a mono scene that started off we were in Legoland. We were in like a Lego city. And just at some point, I was a Lego person. I took off my, my torso and then I put it on Renee's like legs. Like we did. And so for about half the show, Renee and I were just stacked on top of each other and we were like walking around on a chair, like the chair. And that was half our, so that was about 8 minutes of me being stacked on top of Renee and doing this show.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
I love it. Nice. All right. So let's see. I want to talk about a couple of things. John Velvet, Hip Hop Penguin, and Chameleon. Which one of those do you want to talk about?
Oh, I love, Chameleon is just started off. So I'd love to talk about Chameleon.
Okay, so Chameleon, what? Okay, so can you tell us what that is first for people?
Great. Who Chameleon your best is a group, and our goal is that we do sort of like character prov, but we will make that is to say, like, we do an improv show as another group of characters. So we might do an improv show as librarians doing improv, for instance. Yeah. And so we come out, we get a suggestion, and then off of that suggestion, we create a group of some, yeah, let's say librarians, and then yeah, we see what their show would be like.
Yeah. Okay. So, and then how this is new. It's only been around like 2-3 months?
Yeah, so maybe like a month and a half. I think we've only done a couple shows.
Yeah, you only done a few shows. Okay. So you guys come out and you do character stuff, and and Hip Hop Penguin's the same because he improvises characters in a lot of ways. Why improvising characters, and like, what do you feel like the advantage of that is?
Well, I think just one thing that's interesting, I was just talking to someone about this, is I think that Billy Meritzer talks about like finding the form from within. So you make choices like within, let's say, a montage that sort of create choices and create like maybe different types of edits, a different type of opening. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes by coming in as characters, how would librarians do an opening? What would their opening be like? What would their edits be like? Maybe they, you know, maybe they like return a scene or whatever that is. Yeah. Also, I think it makes me, the other thing I think is interesting is like, also like, what do these characters think is funny?
Yeah.
And I think it kind of comes to maybe some bigger idea of like, you know, so much of the humor and the sensibility of the things that I do every time I do a show is, you know, Los Feliz resident of, you know, like, you know, late 20s kind of humor in Los Angeles. And I was like, that's something that makes me realize it's like, wow, this is just one type of humor and one sensibility. So it's kind of cool to get into the mindset of just a totally new person and be like, what would their show be like?
Yeah.
And so I like that element of it.
Nice. That's an interesting angle on trying to figure out what other people find funny, or even just trying to do a show, something funny from another person's perspective.
Right, right.
So here's my question for it, because I like the idea of it a lot. However, I feel like it comes off as sometimes, and I've heard this from other people, but I've only seen like one show, so I can't really speak to it too much. But I feel like it does come off as like potentially condescending to people who do improv who aren't you.
Could you explain that?
Yeah, I can. I can try. So like I saw a show, and it's just like, there were a lot of things where it's like, there were, conventionally bad improv moves done. And like a lot of like, sort of like breaking down like character, like these guys. And it's like, well, these guys wouldn't know how to do improv as well as me. I feel like that's something that I picked up on. It's like, these guys wouldn't do improv as well as me.
Right.
And they would do something like, hey man, you can kiss a dude, it's not gay. And it was fun. It was funny. And there's still a lot of funny stuff in that show, but I remember thinking like, huh, this is tough territory. Like, I feel like this is tough territory because it feels like you're commenting not on your scene, but improv in general.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. I think definitely like, especially for this show, and you also, we're talking about Hip Hop Penguin, is like, I think the biggest obstacle is of kind of avoiding what you're saying of like not having the show collapse in on itself, right? Not becoming about one, people who can't do improv, and also like, you know, keeping out of that meta territory, it's such a tricky line, because on the one hand, this is almost what people are there to see, is this meta show of these characters doing it, but at the same time, still making good choices from their point of view. So that's definitely, I think that's like almost the key problem that will come up in those shows.
Yeah.
I totally agree with that.
Cause that's tough. Cause like even there are things like, even on the back line, people are sticking with these characters and doing stuff.
Right.
Like, I remember just like seeing like really obnoxious laughter at the scene.
Yeah.
as if to be a part of the scene to say, like, this person would laugh at this and whatever. Yeah. So is there a thing or an approach that you guys do use to combat, try to make it not so?
One thing that we're talking about, and this is just like an evolving process. Like I say, it's like a newer group.
Yeah.
And I think one thing we're talking about to combat it is to try and keep the back, like, the back line participation and the meta participation at the edits.
Yeah.
Like, the edits is almost kind of, like, you know.
That was, actually, that was specifically that, that show. I think the, it was, like, video games.
Right, yeah, exactly. The there would be, like, gamers kind of doing a show.
That one, I remember specifically the edits that you got, you did, where, where you're running across the stage, like, yeah, we did. Go again. I remember that was really, like, I really liked that, because, like, that felt true, like, that one rang particularly true to me, and it didn't, it didn't feel so.
Well, you don't want to impede on the scenes that are happening. Like, that's, again, like, in our first show that we did at 101, like, kind of some, like, an issue that came up was just, like, the scenes were just immediately collapsing in on themselves.
Yeah.
And to me, like, that's what I love about doing this, is that there are just so many, like, cool, like, problems that become opportunities in and like just sort of such a different way of thinking about a show. So I just loved like all those hurdles that we're coming across. It's just so cool, and it's just such a technical group of people, you know. Jessica Allen is just like I love just like hearing her thoughts on how to get around these hurdles, and you know that the whole group is so great at that, that I'm like, I love the challenges of that form, because I'm like, I know that this group of people is going to figure out a way to make it work, and when it does, it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, it's but a great.
It's hard. It's, I think it's the hard. I think it's, to me, it's one of the hardest shows to do well.
Yeah,
types of shows to do well.
It is. It seems like it would be hard. I don't think that I have any aspirations to do that right now. Especially like I'm like, I don't know how I would even. But yeah, and I think, and the whole group is funny, and it's a good show. And I even like hearing you talk about a little bit more about what it's aiming to do. Right. I love that. Like, I'm like, that's great. But and again, you know, it's, I can't hard, speak to it too high, because I've only seen a little bit of
and
it.
You know, it's interesting because I think one of the difficult things is like, you know, we, you know, talking about Eugene is a great example of improvising as yourself. Like, that's such a great, like, starting point. So I think it's so difficult to hold on to, for whatever reason, all your improv knowledge when you're doing all your improv as a character. You know, it almost seems like your brain is just sort of in a slightly different state, and it's almost for me it can be hard to just access the same part as opposed to when I'm just playing neutrally myself.
Right. Yeah, I think that's the other thing that always seems like hard about it is like if I've had a couple of good improv shows, mono scenes in particular, that I think about, where it's like I'm not thinking about a lot anymore of like me at a certain point. Like you feel very much like your character, you're like, you're just saying stuff. Like, you know, after a few minutes of being in the same person for a while, like, I know what I'd say. I'm just saying this stuff. Right, it's just all kind of coming out of me. And so, yeah, I feel like if you're doing, you know, you're doing a show, you're like, well, this character would of course,
isn't that such a tough place to, it's like, you literally have to invent an experience for another person as opposed to draw from your own well.
Yeah.
And something that we kind of talk about, and also, you know, and this relates to Hip Hop Penguin too, is still drawing from your experiences and points of view, but using the lens of that character. So, like in a bad Hip Hop Penguin show, it's just like invention.
Yeah.
But I think in the ones that work better, it's like we're still sort of drawing from our own experiences, but we're putting it through the lens of the specifics of these characters.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about Hip Hop Penguin then.
Yes.
And real quick, just for the record, I'm not trying to.
Oh no, I don't. I love it. I love it.
But that's one thing that I noticed specifically about that. And I wonder what the thoughts.
I think everything you're saying are like these. The questions that you're posing and the problems that you're posing, those are the same problems we're posing to ourselves. So I love working it through with you.
Cool. Great. So Hip Hop Penguin. Wonderful group. You guys did. Do you guys do Sketchfest, right?
Yeah, I just got back from San Francisco Sketchfest.
How was that?
Super fun, man.
Yeah.
Super fun. Just love that city. And
yeah, it's great. That is really cool. I really like Hip Hop Penguin. I think one of the first times I saw you was probably during the Franklin Village Street Fair. But I also saw you guys host Herald Night one night where you guys did a Herald like real quick. And I remember thinking after you guys did it, to just explain what the Herald was. They explained what the Herald was. And I remember you guys finished it and I'm like, I don't know that the Heralds can be better than this. Like, I just don't know that they can be. So I don't know. What can you tell us a little bit about like what Hip Hop Penguin is? And
Maybe a brief origin story for Hip Hop Penguin. We had started out as just like pretty much a montage group of Casey, Renee, Jacob, and myself, and then we were just like talking about throwing around and bantering around like names. And I sent out an email just of like to me, the worst improv names I could think of. Mm-hmm. So it was just like Tin Hat Laughs, and like, you know, just like the dumbest, most cliche. Sure.
Oh, sorry. I don't want to completely cut you off here. So dumb names. Joe Wangert told me the name of his college improv group, mm-hmm. Short form. It was don't forget it, Steven. Because I made fun of it. They were called the Rubber Chickens.
Yeah.
Which that one drove me crazy because it's like it's not even trying to be like clever. It's just like a funny thing.
Totally. And like those are exactly the names. Again, just like Rubber yeah. Chicken could totally have been one of them.
Yeah.
And one of them was Hip Hop Penguin. And again, like I thought like you know, people would think it was however funny, and then like we'd start submitting real names.
Yeah.
But then Casey wrote back. He's like, "Oh, I like Hip Hop Penguin." and so we were like, "Okay." So we just said yes to that.
Yeah.
And then we submitted to Let's Do This, and Jenny Pearson shot us an email back saying, "Oh, you guys do hip hop improv?" And we just said, "Yes, yes."
That's awesome.
And then we were like, "How do we do this?"
Yeah.
And so basically, the whole genesis has just been kind of saying yes to all these kind of ideas. And so we came out, and when we started, we would just do a hip hop opening, we just do a rap opening, and then just normal scene work.
Yeah.
And then what we started to find was that people were really responding to the rap portions. And so we started, our edits were more hip hop edits, but we were still doing scenes as ourselves. And then eventually it kind of became like, okay, people aren't really there to see us improvise. They kind of like to see these characters.
Yeah.
And that sort of develops like, but it's been such an interesting process. And I think all of it has just been saying like, yeah, let's try it. You know, yeah. Let's try it. Let's, you know, work with that. What does this mean? You know, and taking it from there.
That's a really cool start to that idea. Right, I love how that came from it. And so, yeah, so you guys do, like improv in these like characters of, I don't even know how to describe them.
I think the best, what, again, like saying yes and developing it, it's like they assembly do inspirational assemblies. Like they're the group that would come to your middle school and tell you not to do drugs. But like, yeah, again, like, but authentically
in the street way.
Characters. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
and they're great and they're hilarious. But yeah, seriously, that intro to the Herald, I was like, this can't get better. And it's now it's time for a group game. it was just fucking nuts the whole time. And you guys do sketch stuff as well too, right?
I think primarily we're doing more scripted work now. Like again, like yeah. just, you know, on that theme of just saying yes, like eventually we're like, okay, cool, now we kind of have an idea of what these characters are in the shows, and then we started writing sketch to that, which eventually became a few sketch shows that we were doing. So yeah, again, just like, yeah, let's push it, let's try something else, let's sort of like refine it and see. So
yeah. And so you write sketch too, not just improvise. Mm-hmm. so what's, I mean, talking sketch and comparing it to improv, like where's a good question? how do you kind of find the differences between it and like where does one benefit the other?
Oh, great. So to me, I think sketch benefits improv. Writing sketch has benefited improv for me because it's sort of like you kind of have to go inside and break it down structurally. Mm-hmm. And I think like that kind of analysis and getting in it at that level has been really helpful for me. I was like, oh, okay, this sketch works best when, you know, we explore an idea and we, you know, and like we need like heightening and we sort of introduce new beat and stuff like that. And so sometimes from like digging into that sketch, I'm like, oh, okay. Like if I'm in a scene, I'll be like, oh, this is sort of a similar structure to a sketch we may have done. Like all the specifics are different. The game is different, but essentially it's still the same
yeah.
kind of. So again, it's like that analysis to me like really helps in digging in at that level. And then I think improv helps sketch. Like, I guess to me, especially when I'm doing like a first draft, like it's almost entirely like improvised. Like I'll just write it down in my head. I'll do an improv yeah. scene in my head. And then, like, analyze it from, like, more of a sketch perspective or,
yeah.
you know, that analysis.
That's something that I'm trying to get better at. When I write, yeah, the mm-hmm. first draft, it's like, beforehand I come in with a lot of ideas or, you know, you come up with a lot of ideas when you write it before. And then you write it, and yeah, it feels very much like you're just improvising this as quick as possible, putting it on a page. Here's the part where I'm terrible at it, and then I don't know what to do after that, because I'm like, all right, so like I have my list of sketches that I or jokes that I came up with beforehand, or beats that I want to hit. And then I have my improvised version where I ended up getting like 4 more jokes out of it that I'm surprised by, and I enjoy those. Right. And it's like, okay, maybe I can swap one or two. But that's pretty much it. So what, I mean, help me be better. What comes after that? Is there anything
for
you?
Well, for me, I mean, like you were saying, like, it made perfect sense to me. It was just like, yeah, like, then, like, I think what I would do is I would just, like, find alternative beats. Like,
yeah.
You know, Bester talks about just, like, have, like, just writing an entire list of specific, like, lists of specifics and, you know, and potential beats and then selecting from that. And then I think, like, to me, it's also just, like, what works the most organically? Like, what, like, is there some way that we can create some sort of logic or some sort of cycle between the two? I was watching an improv scene that was great. It was like a mother and a dominatrix daughter. And the more concerned the mother got, the more, you know, rebellious the daughter got, and the more, you know, and that sort of cycle. So that's something that I might look for too. Like, how could, you know, this beat somehow influence the next, or, I'm not a sketch teacher, and I don't. Like, but again, like, just sort of like looking for things that make organic sense.
Yeah, that feed into one another. That's always something really great that comes out of sketch. So, like, in improv, it's easy to just set up one thing, be the person who's just setting up the other person to be funny, receiving the chance to be funny. But sketch is really, if one can pretty fall instead of like saying like, hey, by the way, why is this here? Instead of that, it's like if one thing can come after the other, and then that sets, if they can keep on setting each other up, you can do that in sketch because you have the time to make it happen.
I think for improv too. I think it's difficult, and I think but that's a great like goal for any scene, is that it just like it just makes total organic sense, and it's just constantly like the two halves are just feeding off of each other in that way, and it's an awesome goal.
Yeah. We should all be so that great. All right. So let's see what else. Oh, John Velvet. I actually don't know when you got on that Herald team. So when did you get on?
Oh,
cause it feels like it's, I don't know if it's been forever and I just missed it or like,
well, I was in Delicatessen. Oh my God. I wish I had the dates, but I'm going to say Delicatessen was like the beginning of 2010. Mm-hmm. And then, John Velvet, I think was beginning of 2011. I believe.
Okay.
I believe that's right.
Okay. And then, so, what's being on Herald Night, the path to getting there, doing the auditions, how'd those go?
My auditions were a little unusual. I was under a preconception that, in your first audition, there's no way to get on a Herald team. Mm-hmm. And what had happened was, when I was in classes, I was like a sub intern for a friend of mine who went to do an audition, and then he came back. And I asked him how it went, and he said, "It was good, but it's impossible to get on your first. Somewhere there's a rule that says you can't get on your first audition." Mm. I was like, "Oh, okay, cool." So the first two auditions came up for me, but I couldn't make them. Like, I was out of town for both of those. Mm-hmm. But and then when I did my first audition, I literally thought in my head, "I cannot get this. Mm-hmm. It is impossible for me to get this." And so I just had so much fun. I was like, "There's no, like, I had no pressure on me."
Yeah.
Because I literally thought there was just no way it could happen. So. And like it was funny, like everyone was warming up for the first half of the auditions, and like, you know, people were so nervous, and I was just like, why? In my head, I was like, why? We cannot get on. Like, we're just having
fun.
We've
already lost.
Yeah, it wasn't at all in a negative way. It was just like, oh guys, there's no pressure.
Yeah,
you know, let's just have fun. There's no pressure. So there was a first round, and again, like, I was just having a blast. I was like, oh, like, for me, it wasn't like there were 12 judges. I was like, oh, I have an audience of 12 people and I'm just having fun. And so I got a call back and I was like, oh, that's cool. Like that's, you know, that's fine. I'll just have fun again. Because in my mind, it was, I had thought that there's no way, like there's no goal.
Yeah.
You know? And so like I was improvising with as if there was no goal. And, I got a call from Neil and I was very surprised at that.
but this was my first audition, yeah, Neil. You made a mistake, man.
That's right. I told him, I was like, oh yeah, you made a mistake. Yeah, exactly. but that's, to me, like, that's always been a lesson I learned from that, which is just like that's almost the difficulty of like, of just improvising as if there's no goal to it, like improvising for itself, you know, for that moment, and just really doing it for the moment, for that, the enjoyment of it. So
yeah, it's hard to get in that place. Yeah. And then so then Delicatessen, and then now John Velvet. I don't know. Is there anything that, I don't have any good questions here, is there anything that you want to share about your experience on being a Herald Knight that maybe you think people would find interesting, or something that an interesting anecdote, or
I don't know, interesting antidote? I actually thought, I mean, just one thing, I was talking to someone recently, like John, at the beginning of John Velvet's run, I thought we were having like a really difficult time. Like we had like a sort of a tough, maybe like 4 or 5, 6 months of shows. And what we were doing is we were working on just doing more organic work, which is different. Like for me, I was just doing premise, but we were doing sort of like doing a mix of organic scene work and premise driven scene work. And to me, I was like during that time, I was like, oh my God, like we should just be doing premise. Like, you know, why are we struggling so much for this? And then I realized, like, when we came out of it, I thought we were so much stronger. And I was like, oh, the reason that we weren't doing so well is that we were challenging ourselves, and we were doing something that was originally a weakness, and we were strengthening that up.
Yeah.
And so something that I took from that is like, and we were talking about this earlier with like doing committed good scene work. It's just like, you, there might be initial losses, but that might be a good indication that you're strengthening up what you need to strengthen up, and that you come out of that process, I believe, a lot stronger for it.
Yeah. Work on the worst part of it, and then hopefully,
right? Yeah,
get a little better.
Like, dude, again, it's like, you know, it's that thing of just like, you know, a bad show might, like, what makes a bad show a bad show? Like, is it that you don't get laughs, or is it that, you know, you're not challenging yourself? You know, yeah. like is it by challenging yourself and by failing that you eventually get stronger and do stronger, more consistent work?
Yeah, I talked when I had Colton on the podcast, I talked a little bit about this, and that's something that I've run up against with one of my main teams that I work with, is getting complacent and just like, it's like, hey man, we're doing this like montage and we're pretty good at it, and we know how to do it, we know how to play off each other, and then it's like, and then I remember we just coasting on it, and it's like, well, that's a problem in a way. Like, you're just like, yeah, you're getting laughs or whatever, but so what? We're not getting any better. I'm pretty good at tagging out this an idea and blowing it out, and I just keep doing it. So like, right.
what's the next I'm gonna say weakness to work on, or what's the next, you know, what's that next level to take it to?
Yeah, and I mean, improv can be so multifaceted that people, you know, there are teams and there are people, and for a long time, I mean, I was doing exclusively montages because I came, you know, everybody comes off that Herald hating, you know, 401, where there's like, I'm not doing Herald anymore. understandably so, because you get so fucking tired of it. But yeah, you know, people just do montages forever, and it's, you know, there's mono scenes, there's character prov, there's Herald, there's all kinds of forms. There's,
yeah,
what's totally. That, LaRonde? I haven't seen anybody do that at a show in forever. I kind of want to see it again. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff to work on.
Definitely,
Yeah. All right. So let's last little topic I want to talk about. You as an improviser, you're funny. you're not. I don't like you. You're pretty big. I feel like that's a way to describe you is big, and not in a bad way. But I feel like if anybody were to see you doing improv and decided like, oh, I'm going to do Nick's style. I'm going to come out there and just do that and kind of make some loud choices and stuff like that, it wouldn't necessarily work. I don't think it would necessarily work.
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah, but you're big, but you're like so fervently like in favor of whatever's going on, whatever ridiculous situation. I did the lottery with you once, and I felt like I had a pretty good initiating line, and I didn't know what to expect from you, and you're like, oh no, dude, you just like scream, like you were just so into whatever I was saying, like if you just yelled, like yeah,
oh, this is our movie scene, this is our movie scene. Yeah, we were like the loud, like
I don't remember exactly what the scene was, but I just remember saying something, and I'm like, I have a good line, I know what I'm saying, and you were just like, yes, I want to do this, don't go in there.
Yeah.
And I remember I felt really great doing that with you, and I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna agree more than him. I'm gonna see if I can fucking top him in the agreement. So
I would actually relate this. You know, we're talking about pushing yourself. I feel like for me, that's one of my, you know, it can be such a strength in scene, but I think it's also such a weakness that I'm working on, is that you know, like, again, like saying bigness can be committed. It can be like an emotional choice. I think it can also be a little like unreal or unearned. Like that's always the line. It's kind of like, it's like straddling. And so I think when it works is when it makes sense in that scene, you know, if in that scene, it makes sense to be like, you know, like there was a scene where like, a John Mellor show where someone threw hot coffee on my face. I was like, okay, yeah, it makes sense to me. Like, if someone literally did that to you, you would go insane.
Yeah.
But then there might be a scene where it's almost like, it's like, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
So I think like that's, it's always gotta be like, what does the scene call for?
Yeah.
And, and I think like, to me, like that's always the thing. It's like, if it's unearned in a scene, it will not work.
Yeah.
It won't make sense.
Yeah, it's true. I think that's always true. And alternatively, even if you can, even if it's a scene of silent and it's earned, people will dig that. Mm-hmm. I did a show where I don't know how this came up, but one of my guys, we were doing a scene, and he said like, that's the first time I'm giving blood, and I just started like sanitizing his arm, you know how they mm-hmm. rub that thing on your arm and I got to do this for 30 seconds, and I just sat there quietly rubbing his arm for 30 seconds, didn't say a word, and he's just kind of like looking at me, and I remember seeing like in his eyes like he was a little bit like, do we need to say something? And I'm just like, I'm not saying anything.
Totally.
And it started with them giggling because I don't think they believe that I was going to be quiet for 30 seconds and just rub his arm. And then it's just like, I'm getting laughs from doing the same thing, exactly what I told you I was going to do. And it's one of those things. If you can earn whatever it is you're going to do, people will get on board and they'll fucking love it.
Yeah. I love that, talking about this, because I think like that's definitely that, you know, talking about like earned silence. Like, and I think it's, to me, that's my thing that I'm working on right now, is just like just playing it super real.
Yeah.
And I personally feel like the scenes that I do that work best are just like when it's just like naturalism. Like the more natural it is to me, the more consistently those scenes are working off, and the more I'm just pulling from my own life specifics. Like those are the scenes that are working well. Where I really feel like. The bigger scenes, like that's always going to be a gamble. Like it's because if you like, let's say if it doesn't make sense, you're in such a strange position in a scene.
It's hard to pull back. It's hard to back up from it.
I think you can realistically go from natural to unearned, like emotional place.
Yeah.
But I think it's very difficult to go from like an unearned emotional place to an earned naturalism.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, I love that we're talking about that, because that's like, as an improviser, that's what I'm always looking for. Like I'm going to the Smokes, you know, every Monday night watching Eugene, you know, we're talking about Eugene earlier. Like he's like, I'm like, oh man, like that's like the direction that I want to go in more as a performer now.
Yeah.
And knowing that like, I think I'm kind of known for that, those more emotional scenes.
Yeah.
But I was like, man, but like, you know, I push yourself like, oh man, I kind of want to get past that and into just that more natural, like Renee, Eugene territory. So.
Yeah. Renee. Yeah. They both crack. I saw them do a mono scene one very, very early on. And I was just like, they were in a cab and they didn't know each other. You see that one?
Yeah.
I remember it very well. Cause like they didn't know each other. And it's just like Eugene's being so fucking natural and just whatever. And Renee's being a little bit weird, but pretty natural too. And it's just like this whole thing is going on. And it goes on for 20 minutes or whatever. And I'm just like, how did they do that?
Oh,
it was all great.
Well, I think like in a show, you kind of establish the parameters of that world. And by establishing those parameters, you also establish what's unusual.
Yeah.
So for them, like I went up to San Francisco to see them do a show, to see Hoy do a show. And it was like they were just doing this completely natural scene. Just, you know, two guys hanging out there talking about a date. And then Eugene just says, yeah, I'm going to take her to Baja Fresh. And the audience erupts. Like the audience just like, I'm like... And, you know, this is just, from me, like, I was, like, the night before, I was, you know, a robot fucking a dog and got nothing. And off of that, because it's, like, because by establishing natural parameters, like, so much, it's become so much easier to find what's unusual for them. And they can dig into that so much more easily.
Yeah. That's one of those things, too, that I feel like people try to be funny with specifics, and that's one of those. I think that's kind of goes back to earning stuff and not earning stuff. Yeah, if you can get natural and be like, yeah, I'm gonna take my girl to Baja Fresh.
Yeah,
that's gonna be funny. But I feel like people will throw out like stupid kitschy restaurants,
right at the beginning, just like
yeah, TGI Fridays, and like kind of expect like a thing, and you're
right.
Yeah, some people go there, man. I've been there.
Or I mean, or alternately, like they'll throw out like, yeah, I'm gonna take her to, you know, Butt Thursdays. You know, like something again, like. But
Thursdays is good.
Thursdays is good. Yeah,
they've got great.
The thing is, like, no, that's such a good restaurant. It's not funny. That's the problem with that choice. But yeah, I learned, I love, Hoya is one of my favorite teams to see for that reason. Yeah. Just like, they're just so good at grounding it. And I was sort of thinking about this, and I was talking to a group about it, how, like, you know, improv and comedy is like juxtaposition. Like, I was reading, like, improv nonsense. I think you like talked about that post lifetime. Mm-hmm. A game is juxtaposition of our expectation, and then we have an unusual presentation. Yeah. But I think like a lot of people, and for myself sometimes, it's like we're just working on what's the crazy, as opposed to strengthening the expectation, strengthening what's real.
Yeah.
Like, that's half of comedy.
It's
like,
true.
That reality
yeah.
is half of comedy. So yeah. that's something that they're amazing at.
If you, yeah, it's true. Doing that natural thing. I spoke a lot about with people, comedy nerds, about 30 Rock. Do you ever watch that show? Mm-hmm. 30 Rock, I always thought, was like a really great example in the earlier season. I don't like this. I don't think they're doing this anymore. But to kind of speak to that, is they were really good at starting things with like a super normal place of just like, mm-hmm. like, you know, Liz is feeling a little bit upset about whatever, and Tracy and Jen are kind of jealous that they're not getting more stage time. And then it blows out to this crazy fucking thing of like, and it's so earned. It's so funny that you're getting to like these crazy places mm-hmm. from just like little like jealousy.
Right,
it's like, that's,
right.
I understand jealousy. I can connect with jealousy.
Totally.
And then you just extrapolate it to infinity
right,
and it's
right.
really funny. But like, but now I think, and this is, I love 30 Rock for the mm-hmm. most part still, but like I think that's one of those things that they start everything pretty bonkers
right,
now, and it's
right.
and it's less funny to me because it's like, sure. how'd you get there?
You're
like,
missing half of, well, you're missing half of what comedy is
right.
That, you know, it's like, I mean, just breaking it down, like what, like, you know, why did the chicken cross the road to get the other side? Like, let's say that's just like a yeah. joke to, like, it's like, imagine it was just like, chicken gets to the other side, and then you start the joke off. You know, it doesn't work because you're missing half of that
yeah.
equation.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I definitely agree with that.
Great.
So,
all right. So, I'm trying to think. I don't know if there's anything that else that I wanted to cover, and we've been talking for an hour already.
Great.
Anything that you want to share? Any improv stuff you want to talk about? Because I love talking about improv stuff. Is there anything on your mind? We can do it. If not, I'll
go. I think
we were
just sort of talking about it. Like, you know, I think the things I'm thinking about is just like, yeah, how do you push yourself as a performer
yeah.
and get out of your comfort zone and get out of like just the comfortable laughs?
Yeah.
You know, sort of talking about that. And yeah, just like how that reality and that naturalism is just like half of what you're doing. So
it's great.
It's great. Yeah.
Sweet. Okay. So real quick, Pearls of Wisdom segment, classic segment. What's a note that you ever you got or received one day that that really kind of like affected your improv, something that
oh,
you remember feeling like, oh, okay, this makes sense.
I definitely would go back to Bowie's like kindness note.
Yeah.
I think that like of just like, yeah, people be nice, like nice should being kind and caring to other people should be your standard.
Yeah.
And I think what I loved about that and is that like it'll get you to more interesting places, like by sort of being an agreeable person, you're going to find more interesting ideas than if you just like at the top of a scene are just mean. Like that's suddenly that's all you almost all you can explore. Like you stop the scene and said, this yeah. is the unusual things that I'm a jerk. So yeah, just pushing through that.
Great. And then final thing, is there anything that you want to plug or share with the audience? You obviously got Room 101.
Oh yeah. Just like a bunch of great improv shows starting up. Like Minor League Herald Night is awesome. That's Saturday nights. This Friday night is the Manifesto show. Which
yeah,
is
that's going to be great.
So yeah, just find those nights, like, and those indie nights and Monday night heralds and
nothing yep. for yourself, nothing personal. You're not gonna be like, check out my website.
Oh, no, just check everything out. Check everything out. A lot of great stuff. Like, this is a like awesome time.
just everything is great.
That is great.
All right, Nick, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Woo.
Yeah. Awesome. Love it, man.
So, Nick Mandernack. Wasn't that fun? I liked it. I'm glad I learned how to say his name right. You can see Nick every week with his team Shakedown at Room 101, which is Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Also, John Velvet. You have to check the UCB website for that info. Also, hey, guys, come see my shows. I'm doing a show at the Improv Space at their 3-on-3 March Madness tournament, March 10th at 11:30. And it will be my team, the Alamo, against someone who will definitely lose if you come and support me. Also, I'm doing Nick's show, Room 101, on the 14th of March. So remember how I said it was tough for me to do that show and I feel like the audience was tough? Well, come out and make the audience not so tough and I would feel better. Yay, that's it. Happy improvising, guys.
Hi.
I'm Chad Westbrook.
And I'm Nicholas Wagoner.
And are you a fan of RuPaul's Drag Race?
You should be.
You very much should be.
Come listen and subscribe to our podcast, How Is She Though?
Where we recap every episode of RuPaul's Drag Race.
Come and get your daily dose of vitamin G, honey.
Oh, crrr. Mwah.